So a guy buys a parrot. It's a Rosh Hashanah parrot story. This is not, I don't know why you're surprised. Guy buys a parrot and he brings it home. And in the store, the parrot's wonderful, says, good afternoon, how are you, so on. Brings it home and all the parrot does is curse. The guy gets upset and he says to the parrot, you have to stop cursing. I don't allow that in my house. Don't curse. The parrot curses at him. So he says, you do that one more time and I'm going to punish you. The parrot curses at him. So he says, all right, I warned you, and I'm a serious guy. He takes the parrot and he puts it in the freezer. And he closes the freezer and he times for 30 minutes. Check back in a couple of years. Opens the freezer and the parrot is shivering and miserable and cold, and he takes the parrot out and he said, I told you I was serious, you're going to stop that? And the parrot says, yes, I'm going to stop. And he says, okay, we're done. He puts the parrot back on his perch and it's still shivering, and the parrot says, I have a question. The man says, what? He says, what did the chicken do? And that story epitomizes how a lot of us think about Judaism. Wait. It's about guilt and punishment and sin and guilt and massacres and anti-Semitism and guilt and war and refugees and wandering and guilt and fatty foods. That cause both high cholesterol and guilt. And because we know that this is how so many people think of the Jewish tradition, because I had talked at some point about trying to reduce our sense of who we are to a slogan, to something that we could say that would present ourselves, Craig came up with the idea of having a contest of six words, and we got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of entries, and the winning entry, and Dan Wolf, who gave us the winning entry, is here tonight. I haven't told you his entry yet. Was wrestling, laughing, and crying with God. And that's what I want to talk about tonight. What Judaism really is. I want to talk about wrestling, laughing, and crying. When we took a trip last year to Israel, a bunch of rabbis from Los Angeles, and we met with the Prime Minister, Shimon Peres, he said, the great Jewish contribution to the world is dissatisfaction. Not whining, deep dissatisfaction. It's what Robert Frost, who will make an appearance again at the end of this sermon, said about poetry. He said, poetry should be made of grief, not of grievances. And Jewish dissatisfaction is about grief, not grievances. It's about this broken world. And that's our argument. We fight about it. We argue about it. When God comes to Abraham and says he's going to destroy the city of Sodom, for the only time we are actually allowed into God's thoughts, not what God says, but what God thinks, God says, should I let Abraham know what I'm about to do? Now, why is it that you debate whether you're going to let someone know? Because they're going to argue with you. And God decides to let Abraham know, which means that in the Bible itself, there is an invitation to arguing with God. Argument is part of the fabric of our tradition. When I took my first Talmud classes, our teacher said to us, when he was growing up, his Talmud teacher taught him a very valuable lesson. There's something in the Talmud called a machloket. It means a disagreement or an argument. He said, look, everybody sometimes dozes off, their mind wanders, and you get caught when the teacher says, what's the answer to this question? He said, if you take a Talmud class, you should know the right answer is always there's a machloket. There's always an argument. It doesn't matter what it is. In fact, the greatest Jewish Talmudist probably of the last century, at least one of the three or four greatest, Shaul Lieberman, was once asked if there are any jokes in the Talmud. He said, yes, I can think of one, where it says, scholars increase peace. He said, I've spent my whole life among Jewish scholars, and that's a joke. Because they argue, they fight, they disagree, but for a reason. It is for truth, not for victory. It's to get something deeper, something better. In fact, the primary code of Jewish law, you may know, is called the Shulchan Aruch, the set table. But you might not know how it came to be the primary code of Jewish law. There was a guy who was a very fine scholar. His name was Moshe Isserles. And he wrote a code of law, and he worked on it for decades. And finally, as he was finishing, he heard the heartbreaking news that in Israel, Joseph Caro, who was one of the great scholars of the age, had just completed a code of law. And he knew no one was going to read his code once Joseph Caro's came out. He had an idea. He was Ashkenazi and Caro was Sephardic. So he took Caro's code and he wrote down everywhere in Caro's code where he disagreed with him. And now, to this day, you can never get Caro's code by itself. It's always with the glosses of Isserles. In other words, the argument became enshrined in Jewish law. Because we wrestle. And that arguing, that wrestling, that's what we're about. We want to argue with God to make God's world better, more tender, more loving. And I told you Frost was coming back. Do you know what he wanted on his gravestone? He wanted his epitaph to be, he had a lover's quarrel with the world. And that's the story of the Jewish people. We wrestle because we have a lover's quarrel with the world, but we don't only wrestle, we also laugh. My guess is that Judaism is the only tradition in the world, certainly I don't know of another one, who has a central figure whose name is laughter. Yitzchak, that's what Yitzchak means. It means laughter. Isaac, the name Isaac is laughter. And you know, of the patriarchs of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Isaac is the only one whose name is never changed. Avram becomes Avraham. Jacob becomes Yisrael, struggler with God. But Isaac's name stays Isaac because God named Isaac. It was God who named Isaac laughter. It was God's own words. That's how deep laughter is in the Jewish tradition. And we combine wrestling with laughing. You may know the story, I'm going to abbreviate it a lot, rabbis love to tell it, about the incident in the Talmud where Rabbi Eliezer and the rabbis are having a disagreement with Rabbi Yehoshua, and Rabbi Eliezer's fed up with him and finally says, look, if I'm right, let all the rivers run backwards, and they start to run backwards. And Rabbi Yehoshua says, sorry, we don't make law from backwards rivers. He says, let the walls of the study house fall down. And Rabbi Yehoshua rebukes them and says, you know, it's very nice, but that's not how we decide an argument. And finally, a voice comes out of the heavens and says basically, what's the matter with you? What do I have to do? Rabbi Eliezer is right. And Rabbi Yehoshua quotes a verse that we actually read this past Shabbat. Lo bashamayim he says. It's not in the heavens. In other words, God doesn't get to decide anymore. He gave us the Torah and now we decide. There's a coda to that story. Later that week, Elijah the prophet, who periodically visits the rabbis to tell them what's going on in heaven. And I'm really astonished at your skepticism, but he does. He's walking in the streets and someone comes up to him and says, what happened at the moment that Rabbi Joshua told God to butt out? And Elijah said, God said, Nitzchuni banai, my children have defeated me. And God laughed. God laughed. It's so deep in our tradition that we laugh with God that when we win, God laughs. Like a parent who is upended by the ingenuity of a child. I don't have to tell you how deep and rich the vein is of Jewish humor. We laugh at the world. We understand that there are things that you can do nothing about but laugh, and even we laugh at ourselves. You know, Woody Allen once said, people call me a self-hating Jew. It's true I hate myself, but it has nothing to do with being Jewish. Even when we're not laughing at ourselves, we're laughing at ourselves. And then we cry. Because who can live in this world as a Jew? Who can live in this world as a human being and not cry? There is a palace, says the Zohar, the central work of Jewish mysticism, a palace that opens only for tears. In the Bible, the great figures of our tradition cry. Jacob cries, Joseph cries, David cries. Rachel mevaka al baneha, we are told, Rachel weeps for her children. And Moses cries. In fact, the first thing we hear from Moses, the very first thing out of Moses' mouth is a cry, Vihine na'ar boche, and behold a child crying. But this was a cry so deep that we're told, behold the child crying. You could see Moses cry, but he made no sound. His sorrow was stopped up in the depths of his heart, so even though he cried, there was no tear, there was no sound. Because sometimes our cries are so deep that they almost can't find expression. Let me read you a short poem that was originally written in Yiddish by Aaron Seitland, a great modern Yiddish and Hebrew poet. It's called Kaddish in a Death Wagon. In a death wagon sealed, tied up in barbed wire, a Jew stands and speaks to God. I'm carrying a candle with me. Do you see? I'm going to light it. All of us in this wagon are going to say Kaddish for ourselves. Yit Kadal v'yit Kadash Shemei Rabbah. Without a tear or a sob, they all said Kaddish for themselves. And God stood up and said Kaddish for the world. We cry with God. Because how can you not cry? We understand deep in our souls the beautiful words of the philosopher Santayana, who said, the young man who will not cry is a savage, and the old man who will not laugh is a fool. And I would add, the people that will not wrestle and laugh and cry do not deserve to be God's emissaries in this world. But that's who we are, edim atem. You, God says, are my witnesses. That's our task. That is our sacred mission. So in the year to come, may we wrestle and laugh and cry with God. And wrestle and laugh and cry with one another. And through all of it, bring a little bit more blessing to this beleaguered world. Amen.